from the Light Treason News, everyone. Pop culture, politics, and a sprinkle of treason. Hi, Meredith.
Hi, Allison. How are you?
I'm doing well. God, we have so much to discuss. I, however, just a quick recap of my activities yesterday. Had a very full day where I went to a Mets game with some friends for a friend's birthday party. And then I was like kind of unclear about where we were going afterwards. I had heard rumblings of a bar and I was like, okay. And then we were kind of like traveling a while to this bar. And I was like, why is this specific bar so important? And then I was informed we were going to, and you may be aware of this bar because apparently it's very famous on TikTok. It's called the Baroness, but they're very famous because they have a Titanic themed, really a Celine Dion themed bathroom that is like wildly popular on the internet. Took a lot of photos. They really like went for a theme. There's a beautiful mural of Jack and Rose, as you would, you know, expect with a Titanic tribute of any kind. The heart of the ocean, the very expensive necklace. There's a replica of it, not the real one, because it's a bathroom. That would be weird. In a glass display. There is like a television monitor with the face of the captain of the Titanic on it. There are doors that are driftwood themed, with like framed, almost like motivational slogans that are like, you can fit on the door. So the big debate that we were having all night was, and this is my theory that I would like to spread on the internet. So if anyone wants to take this theory and state it as fact, I would encourage you to do so. My thinking is, you know how in every bar there's a bathroom door that's been like kicked in by a drunk person?
Yes.
And there's like a piece of the door missing. My theory is they bought the space and they were like, hey, the doors of the bathroom are really fucked up. And someone was like, what if we made them like the doors from the Titanic? And the whole theme of the Baroness came up around that. Instead of replacing the doors, they were like, no, it's like the driftwood that Jack can't fit on in the end and he freezes. So that's the theory that I'm trying to spread. That's why they came up with that theme.
I really like that. And I'm proud of you for deciding that there had to be something elaborate behind all of that instead of just
always
being a bar full of, you know, that was opened by people who love Titanic.
Love Titanic more than you'll love anything. So I left kind of early because I was so tired. I was like on 4 hours of sleep and I knew I had to record the next day. So I was like, I'm going to have a beverage and I'm going to leave and be responsible. But there was a woman there who apparently they have like a piano bar and she was kind of dressed like Celine. And I think she was getting ready to do like a live act.
Ooh.
So they like really, really go for it. So if you're a Celine fan in like any way, any capacity, you got to get to the Baroness in Queens.
I mean, you sent me photos and I was just so confused.
Oh, hold on,
and so
hold
forward.
On. I did not send you photos. I posted photos on Instagram and I got an angry text from you. You were like, fuck you. I can't believe you're there. And I was like, oh, right. Like a lot of people know about this place and like love it. And I had like seen videos of it on TikTok, but I was not prepared, obviously, for what a phenom it is. And everyone was so excited to go. And I kind of felt like an asshole because I got like all the benefits of it, but I really wasn't hyped beforehand because I didn't understand. I didn't understand the magnitude of what was about to happen to me. I am changed. I am different now. This is Allison 2.0. I have been to the Baroness. I have experienced the bathroom. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everyone, that I didn't hype it up enough.
Yeah. I mean, you've learned a valuable lesson here. That's the most important thing.
Okay. So I have so much to get to, but before I jump in, I just wanted to quickly recommend once again Shogun, because now the season is finally over, so I can give a full season recommendation now with confidence. You gotta check it out, everybody. Anna Sawai is it's like the performance of the year on as far as TV performances go. And yeah, I feel a little guilty that I've been comparing it so much to Game of Thrones, because I really think Shogun is much more cerebral than Game of Thrones. It doesn't have that big sort of battle climax that we've been conditioned to expect in a series like this. It's much more, there are big battle moments in Shogun, certainly, and like big, like violent moments, but it's a much more intellectual show. So the finale, I feel, is so earned, very satisfying, but very like interior for the characters and like a completion of their emotional arcs. So I don't want to set false expectations. So that's why I wanted to revisit it, because I had spent so much time comparing it to Game of Thrones, which I maintain there are still a lot of like similarities in the sense of, you know, world building and stuff like that. Yeah. But just be prepared for more of like a character piece.
Yeah. Well, it's like Game of Thrones in that anyone who's written a kind of epic that involves feuds and battles and military stuff will have, right, will owe a debt to this kind of novel, since it was so huge when it came out and like changed things so much. So it's like going back to the origins, which are me.
Well, I think there are a few kind of obvious budgetary moments where it's like, I think had they had the budget of a Game of Thrones, sometimes we're like told about battles that we don't see. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's necessarily like a story choice or if it was like a, this would have cost $100 million and we don't have that in the budget choice. Mm-hmm. But the writing is so good and the character development's so good. To me personally, my favorite moments of Game of Thrones were when like two dope characters were sitting in a room together having a fascinating conversation. Yeah. And the battle stuff, I was sort of like, yada, 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 okay. So Shogun is very much like the two dope characters sitting in a room together having a fascinating conversation the whole series. And yeah. I love that. And there are still moments of like, there are battles and there are like sword fights. So like, don't freak out if you're a big action fan and you're like, oh no, I don't want to just watch a talkie show. You'll get your action moments, but it's very character forward. And I just thought it was masterfully done. I don't know why people are acting like we're not going to get a season two. People are like, wow, what an amazing limited series. And it's like, guys, like clearly we're gonna get a season two. This is like one of the most celebrated shows of the year. It could not be more highly rated. We're getting a season two, you know? So, I'll be interested to see how they handle things going forward, but I can heartily now recommend season one of Shogun.
Yeah, and I have made it most of the way through now, and I'm desperately excited to finish because this, basically as soon as you start, you cannot turn it off. So yes, highly recommend. I can agree with Allison.
Yeah. And I'll just tell everybody, like, don't get freaked out. It's a lot of subtitles. It's a lot of reading subtitles. Don't get freaked out. You get used to it. And I'm really glad they approached the show that way. So don't let that stop you. You do have to pay attention, though. You do have to put your phone down. I like that about the show. I like to get lost in a world. Anything to get me off my phone. So, like, look at it. Look at Shogun as, like, saving you from being on social media.
Which we all need desperately. So take the good excuse.
So did you get a chance to see Challengers?
No. I have been shockingly busy this week. So you just talk about it, okay?
Like, yeah. I'll keep it as spoiler-free as I can, but just a warning to everyone, I got to talk about plot details because I don't know how I can talk. And it, like, it's not like one of those movies where there's a whodunit. So there's no like shocking reveal that everybody knows that there's like a threesome component to Challengers. I'm not going to be giving anything away in that respect. Just wanted to give general thoughts, impressions. I think if you're excited about this movie, you're going to get exactly what you want. It's sexy. It's fun. It's everything you've heard it is. Do I have notes? Yes, I do. Absolutely. But also, like, fuck my notes, right? Like, if you're excited about this, if you wanted to see a sexy threesome tennis movie, that is what you're going to get. I wanted to give out some special acknowledgement to Reznor and Ross for one of the most phenomenal soundtracks I have ever heard. I have listened to the soundtrack of Challengers 50 goddamn times, at least so far. It is the trashiest EDM you will ever hear in your life. There is literally a track that's just, yeah, 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 yeah. And that's all it is. And I am living my best life listening to it. Truly listening to the Challenger soundtrack. I am Tashi at the end of the film standing up, screaming, let's go. Like every time that soundtrack kicks in the movie, I am at an emotional 10. So I have to say the best part of this film is the incredible soundtrack. Without the soundtrack, this film does not work. If it doesn't get an Oscar nomination, I'm going to burn down Hollywood. Like, I don't know how you would, like, how do you not acknowledge this soundtrack? It is so clearly like the lifeline, the life force of this film. It would be ridiculous not to acknowledge it. I would also really like to send flowers to Luca. I think he's a genius. I love him dearly. I love that he's always pushing. And does he occasionally go too far and it's overwrought and it gets a little silly? Yes. I would always rather he just swings for the fences and is trying something new than plays it too safe. So I'll like forgive all of it. I'll forget all of the silly moments in this movie. And there are many silly moments in this movie. I forgive. I forgive. I forgive. And okay. And let me just say, everyone's great. I don't have like an uh-oh note, like of this person shouldn't have been cast, right? Not a complaint I have. However, and this is a safe space, I'm allowed to have opinions, okay? And everybody know I love Zendaya and I've been a fan since Euphoria and I think she's great in this. However, I think Josh O'Connor runs away with this movie. I really do. I think he's phenomenal. I will say I think his character is just more interesting and maybe that's part of it. But anytime he's not on screen, I'm like, let's get back to him. Anytime there's a dialogue scene, I'm like, cut away from the dialogue and get back to this sick soundtrack. And I just like, honestly, I feel like this could have been a silent film with that soundtrack and I would still have given it the same rating and same like recommendation enthusiasm because that's really what I wanted to see. I wanted to see a messy bisexual played by Josh O'Connor and this sick fucking soundtrack. I think Josh O'Connor does the best job of handling. There's a time jump in this film, so we get a lot of this is when they were kids, now present day. And it's like volleying back and forth, very much Meredith. And this is subtle and you might miss it. Like a tennis match bouncing back and forth. Do you get it?
Oh, see, I would never have picked up on that. Oh, that's, you know, that's the kind of subtlety we hire Europeans for.
Exactly. So in case you didn't get it, even though it's incredibly fucking obvious and in your face, we're bouncing back and forth like a tennis match. I think Josh O'Connor handles that the best. I buy him as a kid. Kind of. They all look, other than Zendaya, Mike and Josh look too old in the flashbacks. And I don't buy Zendaya as a 30-year-old. I'm sorry. She still looks like 18. And they have her in this like ridiculous bob that I guess is supposed to make her look older. And there's one scene where they have her in a negligee that I swear to God a 50-year-old woman would wear. And I was like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And also like trying to believe Zendaya had a baby. Like it's just a little... no pun intended, challenging to buy her as like an older woman. So I didn't really buy her in present day.
That's so interesting to me because she is almost 30. So
yeah, but she doesn't look it. That's the issue. And she's supposed to have had a kid. And I'm like, come on, guys. Like, I didn't buy it at all. And I think you're not supposed to quite buy their relationship because he's a bit of a cuck. And I'm not being derogatory. He's like truly a cuck in this movie. Mike Feist's character and Zendaya, their relationship is very like, okay, I don't believe these two have had sex ever, let alone had a full child. Like, I'm sorry, I just didn't buy that at all. And because it's Luca, obviously the scenes that he's most invested in are the scenes between the men. And to me, the most successful scene in the movie is everybody's calling it the churro scene because they're both eating churros. And at one point, Josh leans over and bites his churro. And it's like, Luca, hit the brake a little bit. We understand. He's like, do you get it? And I'm like, Luca, rein it in a little bit. We understand. But there's some really quick editing that's really beautifully done where Mike goes to get food and Josh pulls his stool a little closer to him. And it's a real quick, subtle moment that I was like, chef's kiss. What an amazing nonverbal character moment where you know how much. And I'm sorry I keep referring to them by their actors' names. But OK, so Mike Feist is playing Art and Josh O'Connor is playing Patrick. And I keep getting confused because have you seen the meme about how they should have switched those character names?
Yes.
It's very true. Like, Patrick should be Art and Art should be Patrick. So I keep getting very confused with their names. But Patrick pulls Art's stool closer to him because he's attracted to him. But they kind of have this weird relationship where they've been friends for so long. And Art is clearly like, he's bi, but like, perhaps like feeling girls more, you know, like, so. He like Art or Patrick doesn't feel comfortable expressing himself. So he does this like quick, like nonverbal, I want you to be close to me. And in those moments, I was like, ah, this is Luca in his bag, you know, like, so to me, the churro scene is really well done. It's this really charged scene where Patrick realizes that Art is trying to manipulate him because he's attracted to Tashi and he wants Tashi all to himself. And Patrick is almost like weirdly proud of Art for manipulating or trying to manipulate him. And he's like getting off on it. So it's this really interesting character moment. To me, that's like the apex of the film. I know this is controversial, but I think the third act of this film falls apart. And there are these really like overwrought moments. There's a scene and a storm, like the biggest windstorm you've ever seen in your life. I've never seen this much trash in a city ever, just like blowing around. And it's very like big and like I thought it was a little much. And then the end is, I think, a real miss. And I know that's controversial because a lot of people really like how this movie ends. But it's this scene where you might have seen a still of this on Twitter or elsewhere on social media where they do like a fisheye lens, but they like split the screen where Tashi is looking at Patrick and Art at the same time. And she's, you can see both of them, but it's like a very strange sort of warped image. And a lot of people like that. I hated it. I thought it was really cheesy. And I really didn't like the way the film ended. I thought it was kind of silly and like kind of a cop out. And it was like, okay, what the fuck? So like, what's going to happen 30 seconds after this match ends? And I know some people are like, that's the whole point. Like that they're just sort of like obsessed and living in the moment. But I just felt very unsatisfied by the ending. Unlike Tashi, who's clearly like having an orgasm watching them play tennis. And it's like, girl, whatever gets you there, you know, like no shame, no shame.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that is kind of how I feel about tennis in general. Other people get so riled up, and then I'm like, what?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. You know, and let me say, oh my God, if you're a fan of tennis, I'm so happy for you because, like, I feel like this is your moment in the culture. And I feel like a lot of tennis people are very excited by this movie, and that, you know, knowing that tennis is going to get a lot of attention from this. And I'm happy for you. I'm happy for everyone who like is at a 10 on the excitement level. Oh my God. If you read Letterboxd reviews, everyone's like, so many puns about Zendaya served, balls, you know, everybody's just so excited. And it's really nice to see people excited about going to the movies. And, I should say, listen, this film made like $15 million in previews, which is great. However, the budget's $50 million. Because Amazon really threw everything at the marketing budget for this, which, you know, I don't care if Amazon loses money. If they're going to make great films, I'm kind of like, okay, whatever. I'm just like, let's just remember that social media and Letterboxd aren't real life. And let's not hang our expectations on the very, very enthusiastic response from Letterboxd, because this got a B+ cinema score, which is good but not great. It is an R-rated sex drama. It's not a four quadrant movie. Nobody's taking their kids to this movie. So, like, don't put unfair expectations on Challengers. Let's just enjoy a fun, sexy romp of a film for adults, which is what we've all been asking for, right? And I have to say, for the previews at least, that 18 to 35 year olds turned the fuck up for this movie. That's great. Don't think this movie's going to make $200 million. That's just like a dumb expectation to have, you know?
Yeah, but I don't think, yes, they spent a lot of money on it, but that's, it's also probably what a studio would spend on a movie coming out that's, you have to spend it that much just to get people who are in the one quadrant you're trying to get to watch it. Like, otherwise people just don't end up being aware. I just don't think it happens.
Well,
anymore.
I don't think that money gets spent. I don't think that money gets spent without Zendaya. I think the reason they spent that money is because they were like, this is one of our new movie stars. Let's just throw everything behind it. But you're right. It's like, if you don't market a film, you don't make money. So, but usually what's unusual about this is usually this type of film doesn't get that marketing budget. And the reason they got that marketing budget was Zendaya.
Yeah.
So, and also, you know, Luca's now proven himself, but I like Luca wasn't going to get that money without her like producing this, right. You know? In the same way, he would not have gotten to make Bones and All without Timothée Chalamet producing it. Like, and that's kind of the fucked nature of our industry right now, which is like someone as brilliant as Luca Guadagnino needs to go to a star or a starlet half his age to be like, could you get my film made? Because I can't get the money otherwise.
Yeah.
That's like criminal that he has to do that.
At least he's making them. Like, he is doing better than almost every other director out there.
Well, I think because he wisely has made these connections with these, the younger side of Hollywood. And he's like, well, if I want to, and also I think he like genuinely respects them and wants to work with them. If I want to make these films, I have to have that support behind me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I'm just excited about it.
I think that's all
it.
I wanted to say.
I was going to say, I'm just excited that there's a movie that's horny out there.
So can I say something about that? So I have been saying that Luca is like our preeminent director of sexy films without sex in them. And I heard someone else on a different podcast call him like a sensual director, not a sexy director. And the reason they made that distinction was he doesn't show sex. He shows like what is sexy about people. So for example, in Challengers, we get a lot of close-ups of like Mike Feist's ears or like, Josh O'Connor's thighs. And this is not like an overt sex act, but it's like Luca saying, I think this is sexy. And Americans are so repressed, even seeing that makes us uncomfortable. So, like, there's no hardcore sex scene in, like, Call Me By Your Name, right? But we see, like, the suggestion that Timothée Chalamet fucks a peach. And a lot of Americans were, like, very uncomfortable by that. And to the point that that film, for some people, has now been reduced to the peach scene. And it's sort of like, why was that film, which there's so much going on in that film, reduced to the peach scene? And it's because it made people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so that stuck in their brain. So Challengers has become the threesome movie. Do you ever see a threesome in Challengers? No. You see one three-way kiss that becomes Josh and Mike kissing, and Zendaya very funnily like laying back and watching them like, ha ha, yes, my plan has taken root, you know? Very funny scene. They're all great in it. But that's really the most contact. There's another scene where Zendaya and Mike have a kiss too, but really nothing graphic, nothing like that would be considered like pornographic. more suggestions of sex, but that is still very, very challenging for an American audience. So now Challengers has become the threesome movie. And it's like, that's really like the threesome obviously is an important part of the film, but it's much more about like singular obsession. A person who is so driven to meet their goals that she's willing to steamroll anyone in her way and develops like a Machiavellian plot to manipulate them into doing what she wants to do. It's like much more psychological. And I just think because Americans are so prudish, we like reduce everything to when did I feel most uncomfortable watching this film? Oh, in the quote-unquote threesome scene, the three-way kiss. Oh, the peach scene and Call Me By Your Name. And then that becomes the meme.
It has also been like the main portion of the marketing.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. But there are a lot of people who have already expressed that they were uncomfortable watching Challengers. And that, and it's interesting to me because there's not really, there's no gratuitous sex or anything in it. And we never see them have sex or anything like that. And like Zendaya said this in like the press where she's like, I don't know why everybody keeps talking about sex scenes. There's no sex scenes in this movie. But it's still so challenging for Americans that if there's a kiss, we're like, this is a sex movie. And it's like, no, no, it's not. It's not a sex movie. It's much more mental than it is physical. It's like a mental threesome, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, the thing that Luca gets that most people in the United States have a hard time with, and Legos, is that the intellectual stuff is sexy. Like, it is attractive and a turn on to watch people, like, use their brains to try and seduce each other or being attracted to each other. That makes it exciting for me because it's not just, like, hot people. Although I do like hot people too.
Luca cast one fat person challenge. That is like my proposal to him going forward. Maybe just like a fat person. Just a suggestion. Anyway, I was talking about how, and I apologize. I don't know how to say his name, but Justin Kuritsky's, the writer of Challengers. Of course, everyone who knows even a little bit about movies is like, did you know that he's married to So Ling Song? And it's like, yes. But in case you don't know that, it's okay. There's no reason that you should know that. But yes, the two arguably biggest new screenwriters in Hollywood are a real life couple. Isn't that so fascinating? Yes. Moving on. I think that it's interesting comparing the two. Because I kind of, interestingly, had a similar reaction to both of these screenplays in the sense that, like, I recognize their strength. I'm certainly not trying to disparage either Past Lives or Challengers, but I ultimately felt they were, like, weak in the sense that they don't fully tell me the motivation of certain characters in these films. So I don't think I ever fully understood Tashi. Mm-hmm. I understood her goals. I understood what she was going for. And she is just like obsessed at winning at all costs. Her own ability to win was taken from her tragically with an injury. So she is using her partner Art as sort of a vessel for her own ambition. And when he loses the passion to play, that incredibly frustrates her. It makes her not be attracted to him anymore because she's like, you're a bitch, basically. And she's attracted to Patrick because he is still very driven. And she realizes, aha, I can manipulate these guys into ultimately doing what I want them to do. So right. I can get my victories, however I can get my victories. I don't think we get quite enough of Tashi, which is weird because this is being sold as like a Zendaya film. And again, huge fan of Zendaya. I think she's a movie star. Praise, 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 praise. it's strange to me because it is being sold as her film, but I feel like most of the emphasis is on this relationship between the men. And that's like what's interesting to not only Justin, but Luca and like the camera too.
Well, and I think sometimes it's, I guess in a situation where there's actually sexual tension allowed to be between the two guys, I think I'm going to get excited about watching their relationship a little bit more. I mean, that's,
you so, will for yeah. sure. And it's not just, we've seen straight sex, so it's not spicy for us anymore.
It's basically,
not, it's not even that, but it's not even that. It's more that these characters are more interesting together. And, but anyway, guys, if you're excited about it, I'm sure you're going to love it. I enjoyed it. I would recommend it to people. I just had notes and my notes aside though, I hope they make more films like this. I'm encouraged by the previews. I will be interested to see how it does in the long term and how it performs internationally. But let's also just remember that the goal is to make like dope new things. And if that's the goal, then like you got to support the cool new things, you know?
Yeah. I mean, here's hoping that we just keep getting more sexy movies. It's been a good year so far. Mm-hmm. Truly all I want is sexy movies.
It does feel like the people are ready for R-rated adult movies that aren't fucking Marvel, like sexless Marvel movies. Yeah.
Yeah. I think now we've reached the superhero movie backlash portion where people explicitly don't want their characters to behave like Ken and Barbie with their smooth lack of genitals.
Yes, exactly. So that's all I'll say about Challengers because, I mean, not again, not that there's spoilers in it, but I'll be very interested to hear your take when you get to see it, Meredith. Also, I wanted to shout out, I got to see Uncle Vanya at Lincoln Center, and that was a great experience. I don't talk a lot about theater as much on this show just because, you know, I know it's like somewhat prohibitive just because you might not live in the area to see a show like this, or, you know, you might not have the time or the funds. And although at this point, I honestly don't know how much cheaper it is to go see a movie in IMAX versus going to see like an off-Broadway show or even a Broadway show, sadly, you know?
Yeah. Well, but not everybody's going to IMAX movies as often as you.
True.
So like you chose to go see Dune in IMAX.
Can I say something? But let me tell you something. So the other day was like, you know what? I want to save a little bit of money. I'm going to look on the AMC app at non-IMAX movies. Meredith, it's not that much cheaper. It's not. And maybe that's just because I live in New York City, but it's not that much more to go see shit in IMAX at AMC.
I think it's that you're in New York City because the AMC is significantly cheaper here than like, or there's a big difference. So you might be getting the city, the large city upcharge.
Sometimes it's truly a choice between $20 and $25. And I'm like, oh, I'll pay the extra $5.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, most people don't go see Dune 7 times.
That's true. Hey, guess what I'm doing today? I bet you can't guess what I'm doing today later.
Dune?
Seeing Dune. It's my last chance. It's last weekend. I have to go see it. did you see the guy who has seen Dune 20 times in IMAX is now doing that with Challengers? It's so good. He was like, round two. And everybody was like, yeah, we're back, baby.
Oh, I mean, I'm glad somebody's doing it. The commitment to the bit is worthwhile.
He's gotten sent so much free shit from Sony now because he like went viral doing this, and he genuinely seems like a cool guy. Like, I'm thrilled for him. I'm like, oh my God, can you imagine making this your career? Like, good on you. I didn't get shit, everybody. I just did it on my own. I also didn't see it 20 times, to be fair.
Yeah. Although you will be at so many.
Yeah. Although I did see it a lot, but oh my God, people have seen it a crazy amount of times. And I'm like, I could not see Dune 20 times. And I love Dune, but I couldn't do it. So
you will find a way to see it 20 times once it's on DVD or on streaming.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
For the time being, yeah.
Like, I've seen Inception like 100 times, but I'll get there eventually. So Vanya, Uncle Vanya, getting back to that. Great production. Steve Carell, William Jackson Harper, Alfred Molina, Allison Pill, great, phenomenal cast. Love the way they staged it. There's a point where there's a storm and it starts raining, and you know the audience loves that shit. Whenever it rains inside, people are like, woo, let's do this, live theater. And then the crew has to come up and like mop the stage, and everyone's like, oh, right, we have to like wait because it's a safety issue. But yeah, if you're able to do so, I heartily recommend Uncle Vanya. And here's the thing I always forget about Uncle Vanya. Very funny, lively play. And then the saddest fucking ending. And I forget every single time. And then Allison Pill made me cry. And I was like, God damn it. God damn it, Uncle Vanya.
Yeah, I was going to say, it gets a little dark.
It's very dark. It's all about what the meaning of life is, and is there a meaning of life, and what should our meaning be? And there are certain characters that are just like, it's pointless. And you're kind of like, yeah, sort of. So maybe don't go if you're feeling slightly down, but if any of those actors appeal to you, they are all really great. And I enjoyed myself. And then I also got to see Hundreds of Beavers.
Oh, see, this was my doing, as one can imagine. If you are not aware of the cult smash Hundreds of Beavers, it is a film by Milwaukee-based filmmakers Mike Cheslick and I forget who the name of the guy who's the star, who also is the co-writer. And it's a mostly dialogue, almost completely dialogue-free, black and white slapstick comedy that involves a drunken ex-salesman turned fur trapper going to war with hundreds of beavers.
I described it
and various other
on
animals.
Letterboxd as The Revenant meets Looney Tunes, which I think encapsulates it pretty good. I love this. It's so silly. It's exactly my type of humor. I thought it was visually stunning, even though it's like quite silly. And all I could think the whole time was, oh my God, you have to have been so in love with this idea to put this much work into it. And that's why I watch movies. Anytime I get that feeling where I'm like, oh, this must have been so hard and took so much time and you were just so passionate and you did it. And it's good. And like, that's such a great feeling.
Yeah. I mean, the beauty of it is you can see, like literally see it, that parts of it are handcrafted. Like there are things that somebody clearly sewed or knit themselves. And there's a level of care that they obviously put into it, that it just feels joyful. And I think anyone who's ever really loved movies or like thought about how they come together, it's the kind of movie that makes you say, this is the sort of thing I would have made with my friends.
Right.
Or this is the kind of thing my friends and I wished we could have done. And
yes,
there's that beautiful recognition there. Also, it's just so funny. Like I was crying. I was laughing so hard.
Funny. We were like texting our favorite bits to each other, which is like, again, how you know it's a funny film, where it's like when you can't wait to tell your friend, like, oh my God, this part, you know?
Yeah, this thing. Or, oh yes, that was also very funny. Or, you know, oh, this was a great moment. And I, it's available streaming now, but it's also been more or less touring the country for the past couple years, both going to film festivals and to universities. So my sister went to see it when it was at UW-Madison recently. And that's why I'm now so excited about it. So there's a chance that you might be able to see it in a theater. And in that case, I highly, highly recommend it, because it's just an absolute blast. And you want to be someplace, you want to be with people, I think, so that you could kind of enjoy it. Watch with friends, basically.
Absolutely. Also available on streaming right now is Late Night with the Devil. Another very like internet buzzy movie that got a lot of attention. And I really enjoyed it. I would probably put it like in the like middle row of like three and a half stars. But I thought, again, I was watching it and I was like, this is a really dope idea, where it's about a live television broadcast in 1977 that goes horribly wrong, unleashing evil into the nation's living rooms. I'm reading from IMDb in case you can tell. Starring David Dasmalchian. Is that how you say his name?
I think again, so, yes.
Apologies if it's not. And he's a really interesting case, because he's usually playing like bad guy number two in a film. If you're watching like a Christopher Nolan, Denis Villeneuve flick, it's he's like the guy in the background who's like, but master, we can't, you know, something like that. And this is really like his first sort of starring leading man film that I've seen anyway. And I thought he did a great job, and I thought it was a really interesting film. They basically just like park cameras in a studio and roll for the entire length of a live television broadcast episode, and a bunch of weird shit goes down. Feels a little anthologized, in the sense that there's like a possession scene, there's a skeptic scene, there's like, you know, like a mind reading scene, sort of these like little mini chapters within the film of a moment with a character, and then we move on to the next one. And maybe it's doing too much, but I had never seen anything like it before. It's written and directed by Cameron Kiernis and Colin Kiernis. And yeah, I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, same. Again, sometimes I think the bar is so low for, especially for horror, that when people can manage to pull off most of a thing, it feels especially, it somehow feels bigger than it ultimately
right.
is.
Right.
But there are some points in the movie that I found genuinely scary, like moments where I was kind of freaked out. But also it just was nice to see them working so like in such a dedicated way to the period and to the feel of that. Like I did think they put a lot of work there. And I thought Dasmalchian nailed the vibe of like a 1970s late night TV host, like second rate Dick Cavett.
So that's what I thought. His energy was really interesting at first, because I was like, at first I was thinking like of a Johnny Carson, and I was like, oh no, is his energy not quite right for this role? And then I realized exactly what you just said, which is he's supposed to be a second tier version of that. So he's actually doing a very brilliant performance, which is he's not quite good at this. He's like fine, but he's not like a Johnny Carson. And so yeah, there's a little bit of stilted energy to him, where he's like trying to keep it loose, everybody. And he's like a little stilted. And when I realized he's doing that deliberately, I was like, oh, we're fine. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah. There is, you can feel some of the flop sweat there.
Exactly.
Which
yeah.
I thought really worked nicely. And I also, you know, the way you called it anthology style, I liked the way that fits with how you like what would be on a TV show, you know, like
right.
they are the separate segments essentially.
Right.
But you're right that it does then start to feel a little bit like, okay, this is the next step. Like here, we're watching it escalate. But there were some fun, and they looked like there were some fun practical effects. Just, you know, again,
yes,
let people mess around a little bit and see what happens, because you can have some, you can find some real magic.
So kind
dark
of sticking,
magic.
Ooh, the best kind of magic. So keeping in this lane, but also expanding it a little bit, because I know we wanted to talk about the weird sort of spate of exorcism films coming out that like 90% of them star Russell Crowe. let's talk about Immaculate.
Yes. Okay. Because of course, why do we not have more actually scary nun movies?
This like, drives me this nuts. Is, yeah. I don't understand why it's so hard to make a good scary nun film and or exorcism film. And I just wonder if The Exorcist looms so large that people feel like they can't touch it. So they kind of go for like cheap jump scares and shit like that. I don't know what it is, because it's so ripe for terror and like the best kind of terror, psychological, existential dread terror, you know? I really feel like Talk to Me has come the closest to that sort of haunting dread aspect. And that's sort of more of a possession film. But yeah, the films that have come out recently for exorcism and nun flicks have been like dog shit. And Immaculate is fun, but it's definitely not a good film. It's like a two-star, I think. I really like Sydney Sweeney. I put this in my Letterboxd review. I feel like she would have absolutely burned the house down as a silent film actress, because my God, like no one shows sheer terror like that woman on her face when she is just like reacting to stuff. She's a really good crier, which sounds patronizing, but it's not. That's like really hard to do. Like,
yeah,
real
to
tears.
Do it well is really, really hard.
She's really good at it. And then this fucking voice comes out of her that just, but I'm a nun and I'm here for my first day. It's my training day. And I'm just like, Sydney, I'm begging you. And I really like her and I've been rooting for her since Euphoria. And I think she's excellent in Euphoria. Go to a vocal coach. And I'm not trying to be like some fucking boomer saying get vocal fry out of here, but your characters, you are an actress, need to sound different from film to film. And she always just has this voice that like really takes me out of any performance, and I want to be immersed in this world. Just go to a vocal teacher and like make a choice. Like maybe this character is from the South, maybe this character, I don't know, anything to break us out of this pattern of like, it's the same thing every time.
Is this going to take long? I am supposed to take my vows tonight and I really can't be late.
But like, how to take my vows? It's like, why do you sound like that?
There's some truly incredible moments though in the movie because of that. And I like the work that she does with this director who also made The Voyeurs, which was a genuinely fun take on Rear Window that had more interesting kind of stuff going on. So like, I'm here for it, but yeah, there were some ridiculous choices. And because the priest in Immaculate is so generically Spanish looking, most of the movie I was like, wasn't he also in The Pope's Exorcist?
Meredith, like for 15 minutes, I was like, oh my God, is this just like what he does now? And then I actually looked up who the actor was and I was like, are you fucking kidding? That's not the same guy. I'm just convinced these are all happening in like, I know, I'm just convinced they're all happening in the same universe. And like, I think honestly, they should go for that because none of them are good on their own. But oh my God, if they made it part of like a possession verse, I would be like, all right, fuck
the
it.
The Pope's Exorcist cinematic universe.
Why not? Why not? Yeah.
I mean,
so,
who am I kidding? I would watch the shit out of that.
Absolutely. And I want to say to her credit, I know Sydney Sweeney is a smart woman and she is in on the joke of all of this. She knows that she's being portrayed as a sex bomb. She's absolutely leaning into all of this. She has total agency over it. She's absolutely leading the way on it. I think it's fucking brilliant. I just also think she's very talented and perhaps could like push the bar a little higher for some of this stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's okay. And I this movie was not good, but it was fun. And I think it's worth watching, especially if you kind of like the idea of something being kind of over the top and like a bit of an homage to Italian giallo films, because there's just some choices that are insane. And that's okay. Yes.
Let's close out the episode talking about Baby Reindeer on Netflix.
Oh my God. You take this one because you have feelings.
Yeah. I can't give enough trigger warnings for this series. And when you start it, they'll like show you the trigger warnings. And I would just say, read those carefully, because this is like a film about stalking, but also grooming, sexual assault, like drug use, everything that could potentially trigger a person. So just like take heed of the trigger warnings. It's like a deeply, deeply unsettling, very disturbing series about a woman, a very disturbed woman named Martha, who one day walks into the pub where a stand-up comedian / bartender is working named Donnie, and she becomes fixated on him and begins stalking him. And Donnie starts to behave in a very confusing, frustrating way for the audience watching him, because it seems as though several times throughout the series, he is almost like encouraging her behavior. And we can't quite understand why until we get into the backstory of Donnie Dunn, which is that he was groomed and sexually assaulted by a piece of shit Irish
screenwriter.
Yeah. And also like an EP of a show that he's like a really big fan of. And that he is sort of like self-destructing as a consequence of this, and almost feels like he deserves like bad things happening to him. And he ends up hurting other people in his life because of this. And having like a very sort of confused sexual awakening because of this. And it's like a really raw, upsetting. And I will say, like, I was sort of impressed, like, morally gray true crime series for Netflix. Considering this is on Netflix, I was like, wow, this is like kind of complex for a Netflix show. And of course, the responses to it have been an absolute shit show because of that. We're like, people don't know what to do with this, because there are several times like we're supposed to root for our protagonist, but he's like not a good person sometimes in this series.
It's really, really hard to watch. Like, it made me so upset.
It's very hard to watch. And to make it even more complicated, so the guy who plays Donnie Dunn is this comedian, Richard Gadd, and it's a true story. Like, according to him, all of this really, really happened. And I mean, we know the stalking happened because he has a restraining order on the real life stalker. And, you know, he's doing this thing that I feel kind of morally complicated about, which is he changed all the names of these characters. And then he told his audience, his fans, please don't pursue them on social media. Now, anybody who knows social media and how people behave on social media knows, like, damn well that the audience is going to go look for the real people. And admittedly, both of these people, the executive and Martha, the stalker, both committed crimes. And I'm not saying they're good people, but he says several times that he knows Martha is like mentally ill. And that's the reason that she fixated on him, and that he didn't want the police to like really hammer her for that reason. And then he writes a show about it and people are coming after her. And it's like she posted, allegedly, the real woman posted a rambling statement. And it clearly like extremely agitated her. And I just sort of questioned like, all right, so you didn't want people to go after a mentally ill woman, but then you wrote a show about it. I'm going after a mentally ill woman now, and it's exactly what happened. And on the other side of that, the guy they cast to play the executive, if it is true that the people that on TikTok think the real guy is actually him, looks exactly like the actor that was cast to play the executive, has had to step down from like a prominent position, and he is now apparently suing Richard Gadd. And like, again, I don't have sympathy for this guy, because if everything Richard Gadd said about him is true, he's like a violent rapist and is a piece of shit manipulator. And I'm like, I hope you lose everything, dude. But I just think it's kind of weak sauce to be like, but I changed their names. It's like, right, dude. But like everything else was the same. Of course they're going to go find them. Like, it just feels like we're watching in real time more of that self-destructive behavior play out. And it makes me feel kind of sick, where I'm like, okay, so now are you going to go to court, Richard? Like, how much longer is this going to go on? You know?
Yeah. But at the same time, I do kind of wonder, there's conversations to be had about how you'd make autobiographical art and what that ends up looking like and how you can do it ethically, because sometimes you want to talk about bad things that happened. So you have to, like, telling people not to go after them or find them is like the closest thing to just being like, guys, I know you're going to do this anyway because people are insane, but please don't, is like the safe. It's just what you have to do. I wonder about this. Like, at some point you would probably end up making the show specifically because you need to kind of process it and get it out. And you have to hope that when these crazy things you that you could use it somehow. I mean, like, I would want to try and transform it.
Well, that's why he wrote the one man show. And like, this from its inception, this was always him processing everything that had happened to him. And he really did have a meltdown on stage where he started talking about being raped, and that did go viral. And like, this is all true. This all did happen. And yeah, you never want to rob someone of their right to process their trauma on their own terms.
Right.
It just gets complicated when it's like, okay, so we know this woman's mentally ill, and that people coming at her agitates her, and like starts the whole cycle again that she can't control, and she's been like dormant, and now you're poking at her, and it's a little like, man, I don't know. And also, again, it's TikTok, so take with a grain of salt, but some of the trans women that he's dated in the past, and he does touch on this in the show, where he did not behave well with the women he was dating or any of the people he was seeing. But some of those women have started to come forward like, yeah, he is a piece of shit, actually. So it's like, listen, we're not endorsing the person, right? But if you are looking for a very, very messy, very uncomfortable, like, true crime series, I do think Baby Reindeer is interesting and certainly made me feel a way I haven't felt before watching Netflix, which is like, it's challenging and it's hard to watch a lot of the times. And I do think it's brave anytime someone shows like all of the awful, ugly truths about themselves, even though it seems like he does so compulsively, which is like a whole separate conversation of, you know, there's a type of male comedian that we all know who like gets off on that kind of attention, and, you know, do with that information what you will. But I do think it's an interesting series.
Yeah. And the performance by the actress that plays Martha is
Jessica Gunning.
Yeah. Amazing. Like, she is really special as far as what she does with this character, and the way that it is, it's just so slippery. Like, you really start to understand why he just can't disconnect from the attention he's getting from her.
So that's the most interesting part of the series to me, where he starts to explore this woman, my stalker, gives me something that makes me feel good. And that's when I like sort of kicked into another gear for me where I was like, oh, they're like locked in this fucked up symbiotic relationship.
Right.
And that's when I was like, oh, this is genius. This is like, this is what makes it not just like a shitty, generic true crime series about a stalker.
Yeah. It's not somebody like manipulating and exploiting a bad thing that happened in order to like get revenge and also like get rich. It like there's a lot of choices that really start to, but that's also part, it's part of what makes it so uncomfortable, you know, at least for me, like knowing that this is the reflections of each other that happen is so interesting to me. Like, and I, not a lot of creators are willing to be that honest about themselves. So it is like, yeah, have a strong stomach, really take seriously those trigger warnings. Cause I was really disturbed. And hell, we talk about this all the time. Things do not normally disturb us.
Well, that's the thing. I'm like, if we have a hard time watching something, like, please listen to us. Like,
yeah.
It's heavy. Yeah. Also wanted to shout out, Neva Mao plays Terry, Richard's girlfriend. She's great. And Richard Gadd does a great job too. So if all of our, warnings about trigger warnings, didn't faze you, definitely check it out. Please follow us both on all the social media. If you're a fan of the show, go to lighttreason.news, smash the donate button, or go to patreon.com/AllisonKilkenny. And leave questions, comments, recommendations. Oh, Brian actually sent a story that I'll read next episode. That's very funny. But yeah, if you have little stories you want to send, nothing long, keep it short. But I like to call them party stories, something you're like excited to tell people because you think it's funny or cool. You can send those in too. Guys, it's very casual. We just like to have a good chat. What else? Follow Light Treason News on all the socials. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend. And while you're at it, get out there and cause a little trouble.